rising up back on the street. Did my time, took my chances.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to what we promise will be an unpleasant edition of Dragon's Cast. I have with me tonight Leon and Bill and Dan. We're very excited. We're talking about the season wrap. So we're going to talk about the CAA Conference Tournament. If you blinked, you missed it. I understand. We're going to talk about the women's trip to Texas, which is uplifting by comparison. And we're going to talk about where the program is and a lot of personnel changes. So a lot going on, but I want to ask you guys right off the top, as we stand today, give me one word. How do you feel about the Drexel University men's basketball program? What position? How do you feel? Leon, how do you feel?
Meh. I feel very meh.
Meh.
Yeah.
That's even a word. We'll go with
it is a word. It is a word. It's three letters, M-E-H.
Okay.
I feel.
All right. So it won't work in Wordle, but it is a word. Okay. All right, Bill, do you have anything? Is it a strong meh for you, or is it above or below meh?
I would go with uneasy.
Yeah, that's a good word. Nervous was the one that was coming to mind. So, yeah. Confident. Nobody want to go with confident? No? Okay. All right, crickets. Yeah, so all that and more on this edition of Dragon's Cast, but we'll start. We'll talk about. I had the pleasure, guys. We haven't gotten together a lot this year, but the pleasure going into Washington and seeing some hoops with you guys. Listen, it was ultimately an underwhelming defeat against Stony Brook, a Stony Brook team that got hot at the right time, almost pulled off 4 games in 4 days with 2 overtimes against Drexel and an overtime in the title game. And I mean, they threw the kitchen sink at them. I was really impressed by their coach. I've heard good things about Geno Ford, but he put on a good show and got hot at the right time, kind of a little bit like a 7 seed on the women's side. So you can make an argument you ran into a buzzsaw there, but I candidly don't think that's what happened. I simply don't think the Drexel Dragons played particularly good basketball that day. Bill, do you agree?
I mean, the one thing I will say is if Amari doesn't get hurt, I think we win that game. I mean, we didn't play as well as we usually do, specifically defensively. Offensively, actually, you know, outside of Justin Moore having kind of a, you know, bad shooting performance, we actually didn't turn the ball over that much. We shot the ball pretty well. But defensively, like, we were giving up buckets left and right. And especially once Amari went out, or even when he came in and he was kind of hobbled, you know, it was clear that there were some problems. And we couldn't get stops when we needed them. And we just, you know, eventually didn't get buckets to match them and ultimately ended up, you know, losing. So disappointing overall, but, you know, especially with the high hopes we had for the season, I think just kind of crushing to lose in your first game.
Yeah, I just it's definitely a game of if one more thing didn't happen or did happen, it very well could have still been our game, right? So if Stony Brook didn't play out of their minds, if Justin Moore hit a few more shots, if our best player wasn't Luke House with 28 points, I'm glad he put up 28 points, but if that's the player you're relying on for all your scoring, it's not a good look.
Luke House was a monster in that game.
Shout out to Luke House, though. Like, that's what you're looking for in your senior leaders in the turning time. So then turn it on, man. Luke House did it, man. There's nothing. He's not going to look back on this and go, man, what if I did this?
He gave it his all.
Yeah.
There's no better way to play your last game of basketball other than hopefully being a victory. Yame only put up 7 points. And this, it wasn't like V didn't have the talent. I would say it was
50 minutes, though.
Yeah, he only played 50 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, a problem we are familiar with. But it was one of those years where, again, I never really feel confident going down to the tournament ever since the, back in the day. But for some odd reason, maybe it was the few beers we had as pregame. Maybe it was the old fashioned I had. I don't know. I was feeling confident going into that arena. And even when it went to OT, even when Omari Williams got hurt, I was like, we are so much more talented than this team we're playing. You got Stubby on the other side killing us. And that tall guy who had that was just somehow could just walk to the inside the paint and just put a ball up. Like, it was, we had so much better talent that I thought at some point it would just start tilting our way. And it never did. And we played smart basketball, to your point. It wasn't like we made too many mistakes. We had every opportunity to start just making a good run. And it just never panned out. It was one of those things where, I don't know, I almost feel like I got to start looking at what happened to our swagger that we had earlier on in the season. We could have used just a little bit of that, just a taste of that in that game. And we could have easily won. Despite Stony Brook playing incredible, we still had the talent to kind of pull it through. But disappointing in the end.
I don't think that Mido guy scores, or Mado, whatever his name is, scores 25, which was not a career high, a season high. I'm looking at it now. He had 19 one other game, but mostly he hadn't scored over 13 points before that. If Amari's in, he's not doing that. Or if Amari's healthy, he's not doing that for sure. And he was just killing us. I don't know why we couldn't figure out stuff. How to stop that guy at all.
He gets the ball, you double him. Wasn't like, it wasn't a big body. Like, you could, again, Garfield Turner plays tough, but I he was definitely out of position way too many times in that game playing against Maida. So I don't know.
It was just a lot from Garfield. Defeated. I was surprised we never saw Cole. You know, it's once Amari goes down, it's a tough ask. And then they went after, you know, they played Hacka Garfield the other way. They put a lot, you know, on him. This is part of the smart coaching I'm talking about from Geno Ford. I thought he worked the officials. I thought the officials were probably worth 3 or 4 points to Fairfield. Again, I don't think you could point to any number of things. And again, it goes to double overtime, right? I don't think we lost because, you know, you can put it this way. You can make it so the officials don't matter, right? We didn't do that. You can, you know... Amari went down, so that's beyond your control. I don't really want to hear about that because we're probably a better team than that team even without Amari. But yeah, he went down. Like, there's stuff you can kind of kick raps at and blame. But to me, I mean, I look at, we've been talking about it all season, Bill. Like, at one point in that game, second half of that game, he put out a lineup that was Garfield and Amari and Jamie and Justin all in the court. We had 2 point guards, 2 centers, and a shooter out there. And I'm just looking at that going, this makes no effing sense. And maybe it was a package he installed for this game. Maybe he was, you know, trusting his gut in a situation where they're having troubles inside defending, but it made no effing sense. And I think they were +6 against us in that 2 minute span where that lineup was out there together. Like, I mean, that's ball game. Like, I keep coming back to, you can't have Jamie out there for 25 minutes. And Yame out there for whatever it was, 15 or 17. Jamie out there for 25 minutes in this game. And again, I hear there were defensive struggles, but Yame ain't a bad defender anymore. We had Franz come in here and say that. And Yame scored, what, seven points in 15 or 17? Like, he was a guy who could break them down in the paint, who could cause problems, who could put fouls on their guys in a game where the officials were calling it. You know, and just get motion on the offensive side. I didn't get it. And listen, points per possession for Drexel was, you know, 1.16. It was a pretty good game, but most of that is Luke House being 7 of 11 from 3. The rest of the roster, and Lucas Monroe, who only played 24 minutes. You know, he ended up actually having a pretty decent game. Like, your seniors were stepping up a little bit.
Garfield Turner actually played pretty well. Besides the free throws, I mean, he had like 12, he almost had a double-double, like 12 and 9.
You were asking a ton. He played 30 minutes. He had 12 points. I mean, he had 9 boards and 12 points in 30 minutes. You take that from any big man in the conference, let alone a backup coming in. He had 2 blocks to go with it. Like, yeah, you had some guys who really put on a show. You know, you had another game where Mate disappeared. You had Justin, you know, not hitting the 3-pointer, which hurt him, 1 of 6 for 3, and taking some ill-advised shots from 2. That hurts you. But the offense, to your guys' point, probably wasn't the primary problem. So I get why he's forcing the Jamie issue. But here's the illustration I'll give you. And I think the flaw in Zach Spiker's thesis, you know, he's wanted this defensive identity for this team so bad all year. And the defense was kind of getting weaker and weaker as the season went on. I mean, if you look just at the metrics, I don't know what was going on, but we were getting scored on more and more, put it that way. I was looking at NCAA champions last decade, and I think all of the NCAA champions last decade are top 30 defenses. That makes sense, right? Defense wins championships, right? Everybody says it. All of them, all 10, were top 10 offenses. You look at Charleston, who won this league. Again, the expert comes into the season with a theory that you need a balanced team. You need to be top 3 offense, top 3 defense. Charleston wasn't. They were number 1 offense. I think they were number 6 or 7 defense. Offense, you got to score.
Yeah.
You got to score. And this whole desire that we're going to put the best – listen, obviously defense has not been a Zach Spiker calling card. It was very bad for his first few years here, and it's improved over time, and a lot of that is Amari. We'll see what it really is. You know, once Amari's gone, we'll have a real good picture. But I get where he needs to work on that, and he wants that culture. He wants his team to focus on that. But in the CAA tournament, you need your best guys, your best talent on the floor. Jamie Burgess is a fine point guard, and he's solid, and I like him. Is he the guy who's going to win you a title? Is Yame Butler the guy who can win you a title? Like, I don't think there's a question there which one's got the higher-end talent. And he sat one for the other. And we've seen him do this throughout his, you know, whether it be, you know, Lamar was starting for most of this year. He gets hurt. He comes back. They don't play him anymore. Right? They did the same thing, you know, to a lesser extent with JB when he went down a while ago. But we keep seeing these players go down and then their backups replace them because their backups were better than them, you know, throughout Zach Spiker's tenure here. And because he likes guys he trusts. He likes guys who knows his system. I get it. But he's letting that opinion and that trust in them override the talent evaluation, in my opinion. He recruited them. He knows they're talented. He sees them in practice score. He knows they're talented. I don't think it's a question of that. I think he goes with what he trusts. And I think that's standing in his way. And if he continues to do it, ultimately it's going to wrap up his career pretty quick. I really worry about it.
I think we got a preview of what happens when Amari leaves, as he's doing in this game. But like, Blakeney gets no minutes whatsoever. Like, not even, like, it's a double OT game. Like, you don't think you could use to see, even just to check if he has a hot hand. Maybe he comes in and just drains a three. Like, just the lack of creativity, a complete lack of creativity.
As well as we shot in this game, if you look at threes aside from Luke House,
yeah,
the team was 3 of 17.
Yeah.
From three. That's horrific.
Yeah. Luke House really held the offensive numbers together, really.
Yeah.
He was in beast mode.
While Shane and Yame are sitting there.
He's by far the best walk-on, you know, that I've seen. I think there might have been some others before our time, but it's not even close from, you know, 2000 on. I don't think he's by far the best, and he'll be missed for sure.
The player with the third most minutes, it's Mate Okros. Like, why? Like, Luke House, of course, he's going to play most of it. I mean, he's playing that hot a game. Justin Moore, of course. He's our guy. Well, he was our guy.
More on that later.
Yeah. 34 minutes for Mate. He's so critical. It's critical to the system. And he needs to play 34 friggin' minutes. And, like, Blakeney doesn't even get a single minute. It's I don't know. At some point, it's getting pretty stale. It's been 8 years. The lack of creativity is just, or it gets very, makes you feel very meh, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Feel very bad. I'll hit you back on that. I think he's made changes. He's changed the system a little bit. You know, listen, he started on think big, play fast. We're now like the slowest team in college basketball. I mean, he's made adjustments. He's made changes. I wish that he would be willing to take some risk and go on a limb and put his best talent on the floor, even when it makes him uncomfortable.
I feel like the adjustments are being driven, Dan, more by the talent that he's bringing in. He's bringing good talent in, and he lets them play. And I like that about him. But I feel like when it comes to stuff that happens in game, the game that they cut, was it the Winthrop game? Which game was it where they were just running it up and down and Amari couldn't keep up, so we just took him out for the whole game?
Princeton?
Was it the Princeton game? game like this where Amari goes down, you know, hobbled Amari is our best option still somehow. Like, there is, I understand, but why can't you be creative in somewhere else? Amari's gone down. Like, why would you still give Mateo Cruz 34 minutes at that point? Is my question. I'm not saying he hasn't changed. He's, of course, even the defense, we used to get on him a lot about. He's gotten different, but I feel like the in-game adjustments that he struggles with is what's thrown me off. And I've used to complain about the OTs, timeouts back when he wouldn't call it and just keep letting them play. He's gotten a little better on that. But other than that, I feel like he's still very stagnant when it comes to things happening in-game that he needs to adjust to.
I mean, for me, it's been a little bit, you know, he has brought in good players, Leon, but the, you know, who's playing when? And we've discussed this over and over again, I think has been one of his, you know, rough spots over the course of this year and you know, a couple of years at least. Thinking back, you know, we spoke about Bickerstaff on before the podcast a little bit. Like, that was a guy, I think everyone was like, why are we not giving this guy the ball more in his sophomore year? Like, he's clearly a mismatch problem in this league and he's not getting the ball. And now it's like, you know, we have Blakeney, he's not playing. Yame, why can't this guy get on the court? Like, you see the talent, it's there. A guy like Okros, you know, I get it. He's, you know, fifth year guy, but some games he just doesn't have it. And he's not giving you much in terms of offensively at all. So to your point, like, why is he playing 34 minutes? Like, what is he doing out there for you? We're not getting stops on defense. So maybe try to run, put the offense in. Try to outgun them because we have better personnel than they do. So, you know.
Yeah, and when the defense ain't working, it's time to score, right? Yeah. I mean, that's. I all question Leon, like, he lets him play, right? As you said, and like, I don't know. Does he turn Yame loose a little bit? I mean, he just couldn't get Amari to play. My opinion, I think that was a player issue. I think he had coaches telling him to go to the basket at times. You saw flashes of it, but that was a player issue. Justin's a player issue too, and where he's taken, you know, making bad decisions, and we'll get into Justin a little bit. But when you have like guys like TJ, we'll keep coming back to him because he's relevant. He was just in the tournament. And by the way, I love that TJ went to the tournament twice in his career while spending 2 years at an ACC school and never went with the ACC school. but TJ wasn't, you know, he wouldn't let him play. TJ was granted, TJ wanted to take threes and you had to shut that down a little bit, but he can beat any four in this conference, even as a freshman. Like, use it, press, you know, we keep talking about guys who don't fit the system, and the system needs to adjust. The system needs to, if you can't make TJ Bickerstaff work in a system, that is on you. That is on you. That is on the system. And I feel the same way on some of the guys on Yame. Certainly. You know, well, he needs free reign. Okay. Give him free reign. Like, you know, loosen up a little bit, but here we are. You know, this is, I think the system's in some ways too strict, doesn't let him play. I think there's probably, it's a mix, because I think he let Justin Moore play too much. So
certain guys he let play through, and other guys had a really short leash, specifically Yame and Shane Blakeney.
He's got his favorites, and I don't know why. Yeah.
But he like, to Leon, I think Leon's point was more like, you know, Bruiser, like, you mess up once, you're coming out of the game. Like, there was, that just happened all the time. Like, oh, you missed a defense assignment? All right, get on the bench. You're shooting threes. I told you not to shoot threes. Get on the bench. And like, Spiker doesn't do that. There's never a time where I feel like a guy makes one mistake and Spiker, unless it's Yame or maybe Shane Blakeney, get out of the game.
But and I'll give Shane Coach credit for that, because he gave Yame 10 games. You know, he even said it to us. He said, you know, Yame got 10 games. He was not very good the first 10 games this year. He wasn't shooting the ball effectively. He got 10 games to start. Didn't work out. He pulled him. But he gave him time. He did give him time to earn it early in the season. Now, I will say this. I think he was forcing Yame into our offense at that time. Like, I think Yame was really – he was really trying to just buckle him down and make him play within the role and be a starter to do that, and I think that took away from him a little bit. So, pox on both our houses here. We got the worst version of Yame when we were giving him the chance. And that's unfortunate.
But even Dan, when we took him out of the starting lineup, like I don't think anyone at that point was really complaining. But I think when he went to the bench and then just didn't play, you're like, what's happening here? Why?
Yeah.
The guy still has talent. He was averaging like 16 a game or something last year when he was actually getting minutes. So, I mean, to go to nothing just or barely anything for certain games is just strange. Like, you know, the guy can score. There was times where we had huge scoring droughts too, where we just couldn't get a buck, and he's still not going in again. So I don't know. It's the same stuff we're talking about over and over again, I feel like, but yeah.
So we're recording this on Wednesday night, on Wednesday, the April 3rd. I did see Franz touchdown in Phoenix. So I'm assuming the staff is out in the Final Four. It looks like we're retaining the staff, which is good news because, I mean, if you couldn't find any of them anywhere since that game ended and they disappeared like nobody's business. But apparently they're out there. They're now in Phoenix and they'll do their thing. So I guess, well, for those of you who weren't having drinks with us after that game, there was a lively discussion on what should happen next thereafter, but the schools made their call. And I'm ambivalent. I think it's a good one. So Zach Spiker's got to prove it this offseason. Right? This is a big year for him. Big year for him. And for me, he's got to do two things, right? Obviously, personnel is going to be a big thing. We're about to talk about that. Second one, you know, I think when I went back through my old notes, like when some of the old writings I did when he was hired, and we were talking about having the need to have a coach who was not going to be here, like Bruiser, who was not going to be here for 15 years, kind of getting close but not there, and, you know, was going to be a contender and hopefully move up to the next level. Like, we wanted a young up-and-comer who was going to move up. You know, Zach Spiker just finished year 8. He's going on to year 9. He wants a defensive identity, and his teams have slowed to a crawl. The offense has slowed down. It's more than one person when we were down in D.C. said he's turning into Bruiser. I don't think it's that far. I think that Bruiser as a head coach and personality-wise obviously is a mile away from where Zach is. But as far as, you know, how long do you want to grow with him? Is he our guy? Is he our guy for forever? And I think this is kind of that year where we find that out. This upcoming season is what it feels like to me, because he's either going to be here for a long time or this is probably going to be it, which makes this a fascinating, fascinating time. But, yeah, I think, by the way, he's won a championship. I feel like people always ask for the COVID year. He's won a championship here in 8 years. If he wins another one in the next couple, one in every five guys at this level, you would take that all day. And the NIL environment that we're going into, we might be lucky to do that if we don't start getting the NIL on board. So I still think his resume, body of work here is strong. It was a team that finished 2, should have done better. Honestly, all season long, I thought they should have done better. Maybe I'm overrating our talent, but I thought this was a good group of players. So tell me, we're going to talk about the players who've left. Obviously, we know the seniors that were out of eligibility have moved on. And with that, let me make sure I don't miss any names here. But that's going to be Lucas. It's going to be Luke and Lucas. That's right. And Mate, thank you. And then we also now know that 3 other players have moved on from the rotation, and that is Justin Moore, Amari Williams, and Lamar Odin. Lamar and Amari both gave 4 years to Drexel.
Yeah,
I mean they're our guys, right? And I really wish them luck at the next level. Justin, after only 2, this is, I mean, for a group that retained all of its guys in the portal last year, so only losing one guy due to less than 4 years here this year, I would still say that's strong retention. I do wonder if Zach's balance as a player's coach is too far. That impacts the results on the floor, but it is helping with retention. But let's talk a little bit. We'll go through one by one. Lamar Odin, Leon, I mean, obviously it's a loss. He would have been our starting 4 next year, almost certainly. But are you going to what do you feel about his departure? We'll go with that.
Surprised, because actually I didn't know he left until okay. until right now. So, right. But again, Lamar Odin gave us 4 years. I'm fine with Lamar trying something different. He had moments of talent. I wish he drove, you know, there was things I liked about his game, but I thought he never kind of grew into the full all-round player that I was hoping he could be, with the outside shot, with that driving to the basket, with the rebounding put back. You know, I thought he could be a lot more in the 4 years. That being said, I have nothing but nice things to say to him on his way out. But I'm not surprised, and frankly, I'm okay with it that he's leaving.
Yeah, I mean, his jump shot just never really came around, and I think that just limited his ability to be out there and really contribute at a high level. I think he shot around 40% his sophomore year in like limited sample, because he didn't shoot that much. And you were hoping that would carry over, but it just never did. And he got hurt this year, you know, kind of took him out of his starting role. And, you know, he probably just wants to change the scenery at this point. I mean, you've been here 4 years. A lot of guys that, you know, you that came in with are not on the team anymore. You know, it's a good time to go and explore. And it'll be interesting to see where he ends up. I don't know what his market is. There's so many players in the portal. I mentioned this to you guys offline a little bit, but there's, I think, almost 1,400 players in the portal. So, like, he's probably going to have to drop down a level, I imagine. I don't know if he wants to get closer to home. I don't know what his back in Georgia. I don't know what his goals are. But, you know, like you guys said, you know, wish him nothing but the best. He was, from all accounts, a really good teammate. And we got some good play over him over the years. So, you know, just wish him the best. It's, if we get four years out of guys at this point, you got to be happy with that. I mean, like you said, with the NIL stuff, it's going to get harder and harder to keep players around for 4 years.
Yeah, I thought he was Spiker's model four. You know, he was besides, and Billy pegged it perfectly, the jump shot. You know, we always thought he was going to be a better shooter than he was. And if he'd been, you know, a career 38, 39, 40% three-point shooter, would have changed the dynamic of his team a little bit. But at the same time, you know, the team fell in love with we're going to spread the court and, you know, we had too many guys who were out there standing around the three-point line at one point. And I think when Lucas came in, and this is another one where the system came because Lamar went down. Lucas came in, he started doing some things inside the arc, and we went, oh, hey, that opens up the floor for everybody else. That loosens things up. We need that. So, you know, maybe the system will adjust now that we've learned that. It's a shame it took an injury to Lamar to learn it, but maybe he's not the perfect fit anymore to that system. That said, when he got hurt, you know, he came back, he worked his way back, didn't get minutes, and still was, I thought, the team's best cheerleader on the floor. I mean, he was still clearly a really good teammate. You don't hear anybody say a bad word about him. So classy guy, and I will root for him wherever he lands. Really, I thought he was one of my favorite players, actually, because he didn't do a lot wrong. You know, he played within his game, and I wish more baskets went in. That's the worst you could say about a guy. You know, he's doing pretty well. Amari Williams, also a little used 4 year player. I say that as a joke. He was a little used. You know, I think he's. I saw some of the comments on Twitter today. You know, he's only, what's this guy? He's only played 24 minutes at Drexel. Why do we want him at Florida? Well, it wasn't like he only played 24 minutes at Drexel because he couldn't have played more. He played more as a junior than he did as a senior, which is just one of those things that I don't really get at all. I'm sure they were trying to manage miles and minutes a little bit, which kept him healthy all year long, I guess, but. Till it didn't, right?
Yeah.
I see it, Bill. But I, if he plays 30 minutes a game this year, I just wonder if things change a little bit. It was actually 3 or 4 minutes, some of those close games. You know, if he ever learns to go to the basket, the way I want to talk about these next two guys is just kind of here and where they're going to be. And we obviously don't know where Amari's going to be yet, but he's not a physical guy. And when you hear concerns about conditioning, and you see a guy who's a big guy who doesn't want to, you know, he's always struggled against kind of bigger bodies. And now he's going to go to the Big East. Now he's going to go to the ACC. I don't think it's going to work. And I really worry about it because I like Amari as a kid, man. And he gave us 4 years, and I'm going to root for him wherever he lands up. but he's going to have to land in just the right spot. Just the right spot. And right now, with the money so big out there and coaches are just grabbing, trying to grab guys, you know, people don't worry about fit nearly as much as they should, in my opinion. And he's a guy who needs a perfect fit, where I think it could go really bad. I actually think Justin's got much more higher ceiling at the next, at this next level than Amari does. And I'm kind of curious, you guys looking, seeing the same thing I'm seeing?
I mean, Amari, for me, he can definitely play up at the next level. I mean, I always felt like Amari was the player on our team who gave us, like, I don't know, the only guy who really had a physical advantage over almost every team that we played, from a purely size, length, and athletic ability. Like, almost every game, even Nova, like, he gave us an advantage there. So defensively, I think he's going to translate anywhere he goes. I think if you stick him anywhere, he might not be quite as effective as he was here, but he's still going to be a guy, you stick him in the middle and he's going to, you know, cause problems for the opposing team. Will he get any better offensively at a bigger school? I don't think so. I think his offensive numbers are probably going to drop significantly. He was kind of a focus here offensively, and he still was only, you know, scoring 12 a game. So, you know, from that standpoint, I don't see his numbers improving much, unless, like you said, he finds maybe the perfect fit where they're going to, you know, run the offense through him there. But it seems like more likely he'll just be like a, you know, defensive stopper, role player on a bigger team, which is still valuable for a school. So I think he'll do all right. It's just offensively it's going to, you know, like I said, not be as good. I don't see him change. He's been here 4 years. He really hasn't changed his style too much. He doesn't want to bang in the post. He can drive by guys occasionally, but he doesn't really have a jump shot to, you know, keep people honest on him. So, I mean, he is limited offensively, but defensively he'll make an impact.
Can you declare for the portal and then just come back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can, right? Yeah. To me, I feel like Amari's kind of testing the waters. I was surprised that he didn't just go pro Euro League, just because I think he's done his 4 years. I'd be curious to see, and probably highly unlikely, that if he'd come back even after declaring to the portal. Because to me, Amari was a good fit here. He was bigger than everybody. I just don't see him. I know you say you can see his game translating probably to the defensive level. I'm not saying he's not going to do good, but I feel like for a team to maximize what he is as a player, he can't play every minute. You can't run your offense every play through him. He doesn't have the stamina for it. It didn't seem like it, at least when he was playing with us. So I'd be curious, you know, to see what happens with him in the portal. I wish him nothing but all the luck, because I do like Amari a lot as a player. I wish he, you know, was had a little bit more of that killer instinct sometimes. And he occasionally would find it when he would kind of show his bicep off or show that somebody else was much shorter than him, whatever that little hand motion meant. But I don't know. I just can't see him going to the next level and doing a better job or being a bigger deal than he was at Drexel. And I know sometimes the intention maybe is just to get to a better school, you know, like Cam went to Penn State. So,
I mean, I don't know what he's looking for specifically. I mean, if he's testing the NBA waters too, right? Which I don't know what the market is there. I mean, he is similar in profile, though. I've said this before, to like Larry Sanders, who from VCU went. Like, he wasn't a huge offensive numbers guy. I think he was a little bit better than Amari. You know, similar defensive ability, length.
Was he as like, was I forget, I can't remember, like, did he get play more minutes or was he more aggressive in general?
He played more minutes.
He was more aggressive in general for sure.
Yeah, but even watching him, it wasn't like, oh my God, like this guy's an NBA guy. But then, like, you know, he was 6'10 or 6'11 blocking shots. And sometimes, like with the NBA, what I've noticed too is like sometimes the stars don't translate as well as like maybe a role player would. Like Amari can be a role player. You don't need him to be a star. He's not going to be a star in the NBA. If he somehow makes the NBA, there's no way he's going to be a star. He's going to be like a defensive player. So, and I don't know if there's even a market there. I mean, VCU went to the tournament multiple times, had all types of, you know, exposure. So that might be what he's looking for. If he's coming back and he wants to go to a bigger school and he has hopes of that, going to a bigger school that gets to the tournament can give you that hope. But I don't know if the production is going to be there from an offensive standpoint to warrant that. But, you know, we'll see. And I don't know. I thought foreign players can't get paid, but I think there's always ways to get around that as well. So I'm sure there's going to be some level of money involved somehow, but I can't.
Oh, for NIL?
I heard a great loophole. Yeah, I heard a great loophole. Yeah, because they're on student visas, and their visa would be not allowed to make XYZ amount of money. I heard a team was using a loophole. This is hearsay, but if it's true, it's phenomenal. Where they were playing in a tournament, an offshore tournament. It was up in Canada, maybe, and they were paying NIL to their international players while they were in that tournament in Canada.
Oh man.
Mm.
Therefore, Genius. It was not. It didn't hurt, you know, count against the U.S. visa.
The Niagara Falls loophole.
I mean, yeah, right. Like, I mean, if this is true, it's just. But there's all kinds of crap like this going on right there, you know, out there right now. It's how, you know, how can you get away with it? Yeah, I do. I worry about him, even defensively, to be honest with you, against guys bigger. You know, I think if he went to the American or the A-10, he could be really good. Really, really good, be a defensive player of the year type. I just, something like, you know, the Big 12, like Texas, he was looking at. If they're still in the SEC, whatever the hell Texas is right now. You know, so or Florida, the SEC. Those are big guys. He's going to go up against other NBA guys. And I don't know if he's going to be quite as effective. And certainly he won't be effective offensively. I think you're right, Bill. So, again, big spot on where he lands, I think, is the difference between a conference player of the year type player versus a role player. And I don't know what he wants either. I don't know that he loves the spotlight. So, you know, he's obviously going to be thinking about the next level. I always thought he was going to be back in Europe. I think that makes the most sense. I think he should make money. Maybe he can make more money in the States right now than Europe. The way NIL is, who knows? Maybe college is the most profitable endeavor. But I don't know anymore. Maybe he's not quite up on the NBA draft stock, and he still thinks he can play in the league. He wants that shot, to your point, Bill. And you know, he's taking the Damian Lee to Louisville route. Everything's on the table with him. I don't know the answer. But again, I mean, 4 good years. Really developed, really polished his game while he was here. It may not have been the game that we wanted him to have, going to the basket and being physical, but much better player with the ball, you know, understanding where to be on the court and everything else from freshman to senior year. So love to see that. So that brings us to Justin Moore and the bane of Bill. I mean, possibly a friendship just ruiner between myself and Bill all year long. I mean, I just didn't even like to see you at some of these podcasts, Bill. Tell us how great he is and how great he's going to be at Loyola Chicago.
I mean, Justin has always been to me is, you know, a high ceiling still point guard. You know, I think over his 2 years here, his biggest problem has probably been consistency. I mean, he's had some really great games and he's had some really bad games. He's had turnover problems and he's had games where he doesn't turn the ball over barely at all. So it's like one of these things where, like, if he can find a way to just be consistent and do what he does, he could be a star in the A-10. I mean, the A-10 is a step up, but not like, you know, he's not going to the ACC or something. So I think that is a good pickup for them. I was sad to see him go just to the A-10. I mean, I don't know what type of NIL thing they have going on there. He definitely had some sort of Powerade NIL ad 2 seconds after committing to Loyola. So there's got to be some money there. I don't know exactly what. But, you know, that's the thing. I think he's a guy that you look at, and if you watched him play and you caught a good game, you're going to be like, man, this kid is really good. And then you see him in his other games, Dan, and I think for you it was probably, you know, too many of those, you know, the bad games where he's turning the ball over or shooting the ball poorly. And, you know, in the modern game, too, he probably takes too many mid-range jump shots. I mean, I was just thinking about this with, you know, Aaron Estrada specifically, because that guy was like the mid-range assassin out in the CAA, and he went to a team that literally only takes layups and shoots threes. but they carved out a spot where he's the only player on the team who can shoot mid-range jump shots, probably because he's just so effective with it. But yeah, I mean, again, I love the kid's potential. I love his potential since he, you know, was coming into Drexel. I think he was on third team all CA here, even, you know, not being that consistent of a player. So I think his trajectory was to be even better than this over the next 2 years. But, you know, I don't know how confident I was for him to make it two more years here. I thought there was a chance he'd leave this year. When it kind of took a long time, I was hoping, you know, he wasn't going to leave. And we get him for one more. I think if he stayed one more year, he might even done better for himself. I think his numbers would be significantly better next year. And he could have even, you know, went to a bigger school. But to me, he'll be missed. I mean, he was going to be our best returning player, in my opinion. And it's a big loss. And we're going to have to find ways to replace him in the portal.
Yeah, I see pieces of Tyson Walker in him. Like, I think he could have gone to that level. Like, hypothetically, I mean, but I also see, and this is why I'm so hard on him, is just like, he has that level of talent to me. He really does. I think his ceiling is unbelievably high. And as somebody who is not talented at much of anything, I hate seeing people waste it when they've got that. I hate it. Like, don't throw it away. Like, you've got this gift, this God-given gift. It's amazing, man. Like, he's blazing fast in the court. He developed his three-point shot. And what killed that guy was decision-making. Just for me, it was mental. The mental game was a problem for him. And if he's going to go with a coach and Drew Valentine, and Drew Valentine can get him in line, get him to clean some of that stuff up a little bit, like, he could be a much better get than Amari Williams. For somebody at the next level. I absolutely believe that. In the A-10, yeah, he could be a premier point guard in the A-10. But if he doesn't unlock that, if he doesn't open up his head, if you can't get in there, you got a point guard that you can't trust, man. And you can't win games. Like, to me, it was always going to be a thorn in our side this year. And it's the reason why at times I was like, I'll take Jamie. Because at least when Jamie's in there, maybe that's me being Zach Spiker, right? Exactly what I was just talking about Zach doing, right? Taking talent off the floor to go with a guy I trust. But I just think the point guard spot is unique there, right? And of all the places for Zach to go with, the point guard spot to me is crazy. I can't have a point guard that I don't trust. And I didn't trust Jamie to make good decisions.
Justin
make good decisions. Was it the Northwestern game that went to overtime in the tournament where the one point guard was dribbling up the ball with like 7 seconds left, tie game. And the commentator's like, what is he doing? He's going so slow. What is he doing? And everybody knew it was because he was just walking up and he was just going to launch a shot. And like, whoever they were playing, put like three guys on him. He launched, I don't even think he got rim. Like, with, you know, went to overtime. Like, that's Justin in a nutshell for me. I was like, oh, I've seen this four times this year.
Yeah.
That's why I, yeah. And everybody's screaming at this guy, but for some reason we were cool with Justin doing it. Like, I can't, maybe we weren't that cool with Justin. but, you know, again, he has so much talent. He really could be, to me, even a Big Ten level point guard. Like, I think he's that good. He's got the raw skills. And it was the turnovers. I thought he cleaned up a little bit as the year went on. I actually don't mind that.
He did.
The shot selection was still really poor. Wire to wire, kind of, I didn't see any real improvement there. And the desire to keep it for himself. He also had that one tendency. And coaches knew it. You saw it with Geno Ford in the CAA tournament game. You saw it with King Rice early in the season. They would talk to him. They would talk smack to him. He would talk back to them. And then he would try to score it, you know. And I know this, and I'll tell you guys a story. This is an embarrassing story for me. Drexel Temple, first game, first home game. He goes down and takes an ill-advised shot. And Amari or somebody else was nearly uncontested by the basket. And he came back down, and I couldn't. God bless. Dude, you're a point guard. I think I said something like that. Like, pass the ball. And he took a look at me. And the next time down, you know, obviously he never looked to pass. Like, that ball was never leaving his hands. And he hit like a pull-up jumper. Right? And like, and the buddy who came next to me, he's not a Drexel guy. He just came to me for that game because he was, you know, it was a sellout game. It's a big game. He was, you got in that guy's head. And I was like, I'm supporting him. I don't want to be in his head. Like, but he was right. I got in his head. Like, it was just too easy. It was just too easy for folks, you know, around the conference to get his head and force, you know, he was doing stuff like that all year, and he's got to clean that up. He's got to be more mature. And if he does, if that can get unlocked, I'm telling you, the sky's the limit. That would be frustrating for me if another coach can do it and Zach couldn't, but I'll applaud him.
I don't think I have much to add than what you guys said about Justin. It's, you know, very talented. I could tell every time he went down the court when he already made the decision that he was going to be the one taking the shot. It was frustrating. The only one thing I did want to mention is I do feel a little like he did. I feel like he's doing Spiker dirty a little bit by leaving. And I say that because Spiker gave him a pretty long leash and he was out there on mistakes he could make. And it came to turnovers, bad decision making from a point guard consistently, sometimes in some games. And, you know, Spiker would let him do that because I think there was a fear maybe that he would leave, but it came to happen anyway. So, you know, to me, I feel like, and I'm not saying that's not his decision to make, that's his call. Go get paid, bro, whatever. But, I do feel like, you know, there was a lot of deference given to him with probably some expectation that he wasn't just going to bounce out of here. But, hey, you got to go where you got to do what you got to do. I respect that, too. But I feel a little bad for Spiker in that sense, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, some of this is out of Spiker's control. I mean, he can only do so much to retain the players if the larger, you know, Drexel community doesn't do something about NIL and significantly improve what we're doing on that. We're going to lose guys like this all the time. It's just going to happen. Like if you're a college kid and I don't know how much he's getting, let's say it's $80,000 or $60,000. And you offer that to a kid who has no money because he's a broke college student. It's going to be hard not to take that. Well, we have nothing for you, or we have like $1,000 and here's 60,000. Mm-hmm. Okay. He's going to leave. So no matter how much leeway Spiker's given him or how good the culture is, if we don't improve on NIL, that this is just going to happen. And we're either going to have to accept the fact that we aren't going to be a player in NIL and build your roster accordingly. By finding gems in the portal that you're only going to expect to be around for 1 or 2 years and get players you're only going to expect to be around 1 or 2 years, even if they're freshmen.
But why would they come to Drexel? They want to be around.
Well, there's guys like, and even now, like the two guys we signed, their options aren't a lot higher now, right?
Yeah.
2 years down the road, it could be a different story because like even Justin Moore, when we got Justin Moore, we got him as a junior. And I watched Justin Moore's junior tape, and it was good, but it wasn't great. He wasn't on like a super high-profile team. He transferred because the school closed, and he had a really good senior year, but we already had him. So it was like, you know, you're going to be able to still recruit guys. And there's the portal, like I said, there's 1,400 people in there. So there's gems in there to be found. There's guys who are at higher levels who want to drop down, or you have to find. There's lower guys who want to move up a level who maybe can't move up high enough to get a lot of money. So you're going to have to figure out that, you know, if you can't compete NIL wise, you're just going to have to roster build for like having a guy for 2 years, a good player for 2 years. You'll be able to keep like a mediocre player around for longer, or a guy who takes longer to develop. Like the kid that we have, the center coming in at Clemson, he's a project. So I hope that he knows that he needs a lot of work. I mean, the kid's only been playing basketball for a couple of years, but so you're going to need a couple of years for him to get good. His options were not, you know, he's not going to us or, you know, Duke. It's like he needs a lot of development. And at this point, some bigger schools aren't looking for those guys either because they can just steal our best player. They can just take the best player from the CAA. They can take the best player from the A-10. There's guys leaving big schools for bigger schools at this point. It's really crazy. Like I see a guy jump in like an NCAA tournament team. They won a couple games. He's productive. He's in the portal. So it's just the reality that we live in. So you either have to, you know, we can only compete at a certain level. You have to understand that even in our best NIL case scenario, we're going to be able to compete with, you know, maybe the A-10 and like below, maybe.
I think we're going for the blue ocean strategy with NIL. We're going to let everybody else do it. Our differentiating factor
is we have nothing.
Is that what you have nothing?
I mean, we do.
You come here for the culture.
Yeah.
You want to talk about money? Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting strategy, to say the least. I mean, we do have NIL in place, right? We do have something. It's better than what we had last year. You know, it's better than nothing. I will say that. I've been able to give. You know,
As a person that really hates the checkbox culture, I would say sometimes a checkbox is worse.
Well, you can actually give money to players now where you couldn't before. So I think that's an improvement. Now, that being said, I don't know what's going on with it. It just seems like it's, like you said, like it's just a website that's set up with checkboxes on it that you can give the money. And then after that, I gave money a couple months ago. And I haven't really heard much about it since. And it doesn't seem like if we wanted to even bring someone on to talk NIL, which I would love to do, who would that be? It seems like it's like a faceless website that I'm dealing with that's just been set up to do that. So, I mean, maybe we have to dig more into that. Maybe there's more going on than I know of.
We'll get a chat bot going on the, you know, on the pod here. We'll have him respond. Yeah, I mean, I reached out for a couple of ideas with the pod here and you know, just not a single response at all. Not even a no. So, yeah, it's...
I forgot about that. Yeah, that's right, Dan.
That was going to be great, Leon. That was going
to
be...
Yeah, it was going to be.
Let's keep the secret alive.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I mean, literally didn't fill out the form, did what I had to do, and just nothing. So, you hope that somebody over there has got... You know, listen, if they took it to the player,
it's in a processing queue. It's in a processing queue, waiting to be reviewed in, you know, in Manila. I don't know.
Even this case with Justin leaving, right? Like, there needs to be some sort of mechanism to retain these players. And maybe we can't. Maybe we can't. Maybe Justin didn't leave for NIL. Maybe he left because he wanted to get out of Philly. Maybe he left for a number of reasons. Maybe he did leave for NIL and we wouldn't be able to compete with the number. But it would be nice to, you know, what is that number and can we compete with it? And is someone orchestrating that? It doesn't, I don't think it is. I have seen no evidence of it. So all I see is a website. So there's work that needs to be done here still.
Zach Spiker has $100,000 at his disposal, but he's keeping it on the bench. All right. so he can start with no money out there and see how that works out for him.
Once he gets a little more trust in that $100,000, maybe he'll start sprinkling around, but until then, it's firmly planted on the bench. I like it.
It's the Shane Blakeney pot. Shane just holds it. Since he's on the bench, and he's got a lockbox on his lap.
Shane Blakeney might actually have a box on his lap with all that NIL endorsement deals he's getting somehow. I don't know what's happening there. The one guy who doesn't play.
Nothing makes any sense in college basketball today. It's the beauty of it. All right, so who do we have? So should we talk about this for a couple of minutes?
Remaining?
And then there's like 16 other things. We got coaching carousel, women's wrap up. We got everything else. Although I know Bill and Anthony did a good job with the ladies, but let's keep it here for now. And we'll apparently have to do another podcast at some point because we just can't stop talking about Drexel basketball. Who do we have now? Who do we have now is an interesting case. We've got 1.5 point guards. Jamie's still here. Yame is still here. You've got 2.5 shooters, right? You've got Shane Blakeney, if you're allowed to use him, Yame Butler, and I put Kobe in as a shooter. He's a scorer more, but he's going to play that same position as those guys in that 2-3 role. You have absolutely nobody at the four. Bear covered. I heard somebody, I think, threw Cole's name out there, but he's a 5 to me all day. And if you can't shoot, you're not going to be a 4 in this offense, although Lucas had other thoughts. And then at the 5, you've got Garfield and Cole. And I think that's everybody who's back, right?
That's the returnees. I've got updated depth chart on the website, too, for anyone who wants to take a look at it. I mean, I got Jamie at the 1, Yame Pratt at the 2, you got Shane or Kobe at the 3. I mean, that could go 2 or 3 either way. This is about the same. Yeah. The 4, the only player we have on the roster is Horace Simmons, who redshirted. I think he'll probably play the 4. Hasn't even played a game, though, so is he ready? My guess would be no, at least to play at a high level, at the level you're going to need for next year. And then you got the two new guys, right? You got Josh Reed, who's coming in, kind of a combo guard, can't really shoot. I think more like he's kind of in the Yame mold in terms of like getting to the hoop, scoring around the basket. He's got a little mid-range game. I think I saw somewhere that he did shoot 40% from three, but it's like he's taken like six shots on the season or something. Like it's not a large sample size. I mean, I watched a large amount of games and he barely ever shot threes. But he's going to probably, the way that we have right now, he's going to have to contribute for what we have until we figure out what we're going to do in the portal. And then we have Clemson, Edem Wanyan. I'm going to still probably butcher that, but about as good as you can do. And again, like I said, he's a project. He's 6'10". He played soccer a lot, I think, so he moves well. He needs to play more basketball. I think he's only been playing for like 3 years, and it's kind of like you can tell he hasn't played a lot of basketball just from like things he's doing. Like he's doing things the coaches are asking him to. Like one example would be he boxes out, but he boxes the guy too far out to the point where he can't get the rebound. Like a small thing like that, or pick and roll. He's just not doing the right angle in order to get the pass off the roll. Like little things that like just come with playing a lot of basketball he doesn't have yet. So my point is I don't think he's going to play much next year. He's going to be a guy that it's like a 2 or 3 year play down the road. You're hoping that he develops. So you're going to have to hit the portal hard in order to fill out the rest of this roster.
Another blue ocean strategy. I love it. Getting after soccer players on, you know, for basketball. Untapped.
What is that? Burns from NC State's getting tight end offers in the NFL. He might get drafted in the NFL, right?
Yeah. That's happened. And Antonio Gates showed that could happen.
There's been a few now. Bo Alley Cox, still with the Colts from VCU.
Yeah. I was hoping Daryl McCoy would have got a shot. Man, it's like an offensive lineman or something.
He likes that bouncer. You know, he likes that security guard money, though.
Yeah, he's
bouncer money.
21 Savage. Bodyguard or whatever he is over there, which is pretty, seems like a pretty good gig he's got going.
I wouldn't mess with him.
No, definitely not.
I'm going to make two aside because this is interesting because we have three centers on that roster, right?
Only two are going to play though next year, would be my guess.
Right. This is where I'm going. I think Clemson's going to have to redshirt because I think you have to bring in a center.
Do you
think you could start Garfield?
I think unless you feel like Cole is ready to take a big, like, you know, sophomore to junior leap, like some of our big men have done, I think you got to go get somebody.
It's going to be kind of great. You're going to have four centers on the roster, a guy who doesn't want to have any at all. But I think you have to. I agree with you. And obviously you need to bring in somebody at the four because it's an empty cupboard right now. I mean, Horace Simmons, we'll see. But they redshirted him for a reason, presumably.
Four is your biggest issue. You need to get, I mean, preferably a star at the four coming in from somewhere. We don't have anyone return. I mean, we don't have anyone returning that has consistently produced. Even though we like, I think we like a lot of these guys. Like we like Jamie, we like Yame, we like Shane, we like Kobe. None of them has had to carry the load yet. So you got to go get some guys who can, or else you're really putting a lot of faith in those guys, taking large leaps, all of them.
Yeah. I mean, Yame, I would argue, has actually in the past before, you know.
I wouldn't argue there.
Yeah. Away. But, yeah, generally speaking, yeah, as much as we like Blakely, we haven't seen it yet. Right. Kobe definitely has got – I mean, I like his game. I like his game a lot. So, again, I like Jamie as if you've got four other scorers on the court, I think Jamie's a great point guard.
Yeah.
And he developed a little bit as the season went on, too. He's just not going to break down a defense the same way Justin would. So you need Yame next to him, which we've talked about all year. I think they're going to be forced into it.
And hopefully he'll come into the season healthy next year, Dan, which, you know, I think he took a step back this year because he wasn't healthy to start the year. So hopefully he can take some level of jump next year.
100%. He was better the second half than the first by far. But, yeah, this is – Zach Spiker is going to have to go into not a D2 fixer-upper. You know, he's going to have to go in the portal. He's going to have to get – somebody who could play at this level to start immediately. Probably two, you know, if he wants to contend next year. And he hasn't shown the ability to do it yet. And I think, because, listen, put everything else aside for a moment that we've been talking about. Zach Spiker's been a great face for the program, by and large. Solid off the court presence. He's been involved with the university. You know, likable guy. He's taken this program from was a fairly poor culture when he got here, my understanding internally, and made it better every year. This is a 19 or 21 season, depending on what how many D2 wins you're going to count. But you know, he's trended up every year. So I don't want to take away and say Zach's done a terrible job. He hasn't. He's been a very good coach. He has not been maybe an elite coach, but he's been very good. And you know, the question is, can he make this is the big question, the big Zach Spiker question. He can get you to wherever we are now, 130, 140 in the country. Can he get you into double digits? I think he's if he rolls out the same stuff he's been rolling out the couple of years, he's not going to do it. He's going to have to show some tricks. He's going to have to show some ability to win in the portal. And so that to me is why you give him one more season to say, hey, you've been our guy. You've done right by us. You've brought us this level. This was disappointing. This was a disappointing outcome. It was the first time. I think part of the reason why we had that confidence that you talked about Leon going to this tournament game is because he hasn't lost games in the tournament that he wasn't supposed to lose. You know, he's been a good driver. So we're surprised. This was an upset. It happens. You know, you one and done shouldn't be the case. It's not who we are, Drexel. It's not who we've been. But this is a big show me year, a big, big show me year for him. And what would otherwise be a rebuild year, he needs to show out. So he needs to hit the portal. I'm very curious. And he needs to, quite frankly, put his most talented players on the floor. And if he does those two things, I think the rest of what he's done is great. But he needs to be able to do those two. And if he can, I think he'll be very successful. And I hope he does and he cashes it. And if he can go to the next level, I hope he can. You know, like I'm rooting for Zach Spiker.
I mean, I'm rooting for Zach Spiker. That's the goal, right, Dan? I mean, he's so successful here, he moves on. I mean, I think that's what we all want. There's no delusions here that we're going to keep someone unless we hire like Malik Rose, and he just wants to stay here and coach the team forever. Like, it's just we're going to be a stepping stone to somewhere else. I mean, Spiker has pulled one juggernaut out of the portal, and that was Tremaine Isabel, right? And Tremaine is
talking about Justin Moore, man.
I mean, Tremaine Isabel is one of the most talented players we've ever had here. Now there was maybe fit problems.
Kirk Lee disagrees.
Kirk Lee would disagree. There was definitely like problems that caused, right? So I don't know if maybe he's it doesn't seem like he's even shooting for that since then. Like he got this guy. He's clearly like he was clearly the best player on the team instantly.
I don't know. You're probably one of the best players in the league.
He was. He was. And had he stayed, he might have been on NBA radars. Honestly, I think leaving actually hurt him because all his numbers dropped. We might have been pretty good had he come back too. But
he was the more extreme. He really was the more extreme example of Justin Moore, though. Like, I mean, he was even more talented than Justin was.
Yeah.
And he was even more mentally like, I don't know what you're doing, dude.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so
a little more consistent.
Oh, he was so good. I mean, it was from a production standpoint, the guy was really good. I mean, he's maybe the best ball handler we'll ever see here. And the guy just had, you know, a knack for scoring. But, like, we haven't seen that since. Like, Hofstra's landing these guys on a regular basis. Now, some of it is, like, you know, I think they give more freedom to their guys to just go out there and do their thing. But even with the guys he's looking at the portal, I mean, I'm not watching the guys that we're looking at, but it seems like we're not shooting for stars. Like, it seems like we're shooting for, you know, high-level role players, maybe? I don't know. Like, you know, you never know what they'll develop in here. I mean, Trevor John looked like nothing coming in, and he, you know, turned out to be way better than we thought he was. So you never know. But, like, it's not like Hofstra. Like, Estrada played so well as a freshman, he went up a level. And then, you know, didn't do too well there and dropped back down. Like, that's a good market right there. And then the other guy, Tyler Thomas. Like, that guy was a star at Sacred Heart. And they went and, you know, picked him up and took him over here. And he's even better. So, I mean, there's like, we're looking at guys like 9 points a game in their third or fourth year. You know, I mean, maybe there's a higher ceiling. You're not seeing it again. Could be that maybe a TJ Bickerstaff situation. But yeah, I mean, we need to pull stars out or it's going to be, I think, going to be a tough year for us.
Yeah, and but to your point, if Yame goes to, talked about this offline. He's a what, first team, second team, all CAA player.
I was trying not to mention that, Dan. I don't know.
Yeah. Don't let him know.
Hopefully no one's listening to this.
Come on.
Don't worry. Nobody listens to this.
Let's just bleep that part out.
I might edit this part out.
Actually, you should bleep that. That would actually be pretty funny. But you have to not just bring the player in, but give them, you know, put them in that position to succeed, which sometimes means being hands off, like Speedy is. Right? Sometimes, you know, you got to ISO them and let them go if they're that talented.
Yeah.
And we ISO'd for Amari some. He's probably the only guy on the team. And we were ISOing him for him to take a shot from 8 feet from the basket. So much confusion. So much confusion with our choices. I don't get it. But yeah, we could bring in stars. I just don't know if our system allows for stars right now. You know, the star is when a 3-point shooter gets hot one game. It's that makes, you know, every time, you know, somebody goes on a heater, they're a star. But none of that is, you know, getting the basket, running the offense for somebody. Anything. Like, I don't know. I'm just very frustrated right now by, you got to let them go. You got to let them go.
Can't argue there.
So hopefully, again, hit the portal, bring them in, and let them play a little bit. Yeah, that's a sign. All right. So that'll take us out, I think. What are you most excited for next year, Bill?
I mean, come on.
Shane Blakely.
It's got to be Blakely. Let's be honest with ourselves. I mean, the only hope is that we have to play him because there's no other options. So I hope to see him more.
Brilliant. And now, again, the strategy of this team to keep Blakely on the bench so he doesn't get enough minutes. So he has no options. Incredible. Incredible.
I always think Spiker's playing the long game, but then next year we're going to see him at the end of the bench holding the lockbox still.
Just keeps getting longer.
Shane, why are you sitting at the end of the bench holding $100,000 in a lockbox? They're saving me. They're saving me. He keeps telling me he's saving me for the next game.
Yeah. I think going into next season, at least I have lowered expectations. So it's only one way to go. Maybe not. Maybe still further down. Who knows?
That was the strategy. Lower the expectations. The expectations were just too high this year.
Yeah.
All right. So what would happen here? There is, I mean, Chris Mack, the Charleston's a big deal. I don't want to touch a little bit more on the women's side. Some of the other coaching moves in the conference. There's been a few. Brian Earle, great hire. Great hire by William & Mary. Not just because he played at Princeton when I was a big Princeton fan watching them, but also because he was a really good coach for Cornell. I was fairly shocked that he left Cornell for William & Mary. It's a choice, and I'm intrigued. But William & Mary's got a lot of money, guys. William & Mary's got a lot of money and a lot of big donors. And if this is a sign that they're starting to take things seriously, sleeping giant. So when somebody texted me the other day, and yeah, like, I mean, hypothetically, you could do something there. So maybe that's the move. That's what was sold to him. All kinds of, but everybody keeps getting better. Everybody keeps getting better. The money keeps getting bigger, and Drexel's going to have to get in line. So we'll also hopefully, I know we promised to try to get Stacy or Amy on the program. So we'll keep dropping pods into the spring, guys. Maybe not quite as often as in season, but keep looking for them. We'll keep rooting for our Dragons. It'll be a fun offseason, be a busy offseason. We should have some news to report, I'd imagine, next time we get together. We're going to have to start signing somebody. Bill will be right on top of it on the website, too, so make sure you're looking out. For Bill, for Leon, I am Dan. Have a great night. Thanks for listening to Dragons Cast.